Maybe just to let me, let us sort of, I want to see whether we are communicating well, so maybe you can ask me some questions if you want. Because there's no point of me talking 2 hours, and if you don't understand what I'm talking, so I have to know whether you are getting what I'm trying to tell you. So ask me questions if you have, or I will ask you.
What is the difference between perceptions and conceptions?
They are almost the same. Perception is more objective and conception is subjective.
Yes, behind.
Yeah. I can't hear you. Can you? Pardon? I'm hearing a lot of echo. Yeah, that's better. Good. Yes. Well, it's okay. If they stand up, I think it's okay. If they stand up. Yeah. Okay. Right and wrong. Okay, right and wrong. Let's discuss this a little bit, because it's quite an important. Right and wrong. Last night I was somewhere discussing about this, and I think it's quite important. In Buddhism, it's really important that you place wisdom above all. Okay? Wisdom is the most important. Like Shantideva said, just beginning of the 9th chapter, he said, "Yenla dida thamjini tube sharap tandu sung." All the other branches of bodhisattva activities are taught so that the bodhisattva can apply the wisdom. Okay? Wisdom is the most important. And I tell you this because at times, when we talk about a religion, when we talk about a religion, immediately our human mind talks about an ethic. I've been asked many times, like sometimes I'm flying in the plane and they know that I'm kind of a religious person, so they ask, "What are you? Are you a Muslim or a Buddhist or what?" Then I say, "I'm Buddhist." Then the immediate question is, "So as a Buddhist, you can't eat meat, isn't it?" You understand? That's how they define a religion. Immediately, a religion is measured by what you can do, what is wrong to do, and what is right to do, and all that. I think it is true with many other religions, but it is not true with Buddhism. In Buddhism, you cannot define Buddhism because of its ethic. Not at all. I will tell you one thing. Why? Because if you define Buddhism based on ethic, then Buddhism will contradict itself too much. In the Vinaya Sutra, for instance, Buddha said, whatever is offered must eat. The monks must eat this. So meat is offered, they eat meat. In the Mahayana, Buddha said, a bodhisattva should never eat meat. Thekva chela shala ka. Mahayana should never eat meat. He emphasized that. See, it's a contradiction. There's many like that. Many contradictions like that. In the Vinaya, a person must hold the pratimoksha vow, such as bhikshu or bhikshuni, a vow as you protect your life, you must really, the vow is the most important. Whereas in the Mahayana, if it is going to benefit the sentient beings, you can kill, you can lie, you can slander, you can say bad things. Basically, you can do except the three non-virtuous action of mind, a bodhisattva can do anything. See, it's a contradiction. Right? So, right and wrong is a very ethical term. Ethic. It's a very ethic and morality-oriented question. Okay? Now, when we talk about nangsum, the pure perception, the triple perception or the triple vision, we use word like impure perception, madakpi nangwa, madakpa, impure perception. Now this judgment of impure is not moral or ethical. The impure is nothing to do with because Buddha said this is impure. You understand? So now the question is, how do we judge what is wrong and what is right, or what is impure and what is pure? We judge with the objects, the manifestation of the object. Okay. We look, we experience something. Okay, we have a perception. Okay. These perceptions, when we experience, first of all, it doesn't last. It's impermanent. It's impermanent. Secondly, it's interdependent. Thirdly, it has no truly existing nature, truly existing entity. So, what you see is like a mirage. It has no essence. It does not last. It's not a permanent. And this is what is defined as impure. It's not a moral thing. Any other questions?
Rinpoche, in the Mahayana Buddhism, the Buddha nature is emphasized very much. And also in the Vedan.
Also in?
The Vedan. The Hindu, yes. Vedan.
Yes.
The Vedas. The Upanishads. Mm-hmm. Is spoken about the Atma. Mm-hmm. Could you please give us your right perception, pure perception of whether there's any difference between the Buddha nature and the Atma?
That's a very difficult question. I'm a very pro-Hindu, by the way. I'm a very pro-Hindu. I think Hinduism is one of the greatest philosophy. And I tell this to many of my colleagues, and I believe, I'm not just joking. I always say that if I'm not a Buddhist, and if I'm not allowed to be a Buddhist, and if I have to choose a religion that is not Buddhism but all the other, I will definitely choose Hinduism. It's a very, very sophisticated. It has been marred by a lot of political upheaval and all of that. And very sad. Very, very sad that that's happened. And also, maybe the Brahmins, you know, they have destroyed the image of Hindu a lot. Other than that, Hinduism is a very, it's a very profound teaching. And yes, this question has been asked by myself to many lamas. whether there is any difference between Atman and Buddha nature. Very, very difficult to answer this in one way. But on the other hand, the Buddhist fundamental view of emptiness always helps. Buddha nature is emptiness. Emptiness is Buddha nature. Emptiness is not other than the Buddha nature, and Buddha nature is not other than the emptiness. You know, let's quote Heart Sutra. So basically, Buddha nature is not a phenomena. It's not a phenomenon. Whereas Atman, the way the Upanishad talks about Atman, it seems to be indicating that it is a phenomenon. And that may be one of the biggest differences between the Hindu concept of Atman and the Buddhist concept of Buddha nature. I'll tell you, see, Buddha nature is actually what we call Dande. Dalvin Debu. It's a result of elimination. You got it? Result of elimination. If you were to ask me, how can you prove that Buddha nature exists? Show me Buddha nature. Very difficult. Right? But there's something I can do. And that is, I can prove that defilements is destroyable. You got it? That ignorance is destroyable. Aggression, passion, ignorance, pride, jealousy, all these are destroyable. They are temporal. They are dependent, they are caused, they are conditioned. With effort, we can destroy all of them. That I can prove easily. Let's say you are an angry person, right? Even without using the Buddhist method, somebody can pat your shoulder, calm down, calms down. So we know that anger is not a permanent entity. It is something that can be manipulated. It is something that can be destroyed. Okay? Now, I can prove that all these negative emotions can be destroyed absolutely. So what I'm saying is, I can prove the existence of absence of ignorance. And that proving that absence of ignorance is presence of the Buddha nature. Other than that, if you want me to show you a Buddha nature with light glowing from its head, six arms, eight legs, it doesn't exist. And if it does exist, then it becomes an entity, and then it is very dangerous. Then Buddhist concept of Buddha nature would become like a Christian concept of soul. See, the Christians talk about saving the soul. Isn't it? Save my soul, save his soul. You do not save Buddha nature. Buddha nature itself is a savior. It's the Buddha. Buddha cannot be saved. Two different things. Okay, if there's no more questions, we will have a break. Toilet break.